Okay, we're coming over somebody else's repeaters, it sounds like, because I'm not getting the full call sign. I'm getting pieces of it. Is anybody getting that full call sign?
I heard there was a heifer down underway, but as you might expect, I'm just hearing what the repeater's hearing. Tell you how for it.
Okay, Andy, well, I think that's somebody on a different repeater, and we're mixing with them. Don't know what's going on there. I don't know if there's another 610 somewhere around, but I think he's probably on another 610. But, Larry, I don't know if you're going to be at the radio rally next week, but next week is the 2024 Upstate Radio Rally that is over at the Esquarian Park. If you're going to be over there, I can show you how to do that over there. Riverbend Esquarian Park. I don't know if you were planning to be there, but I do plan to be there. And if I see you there, I'll show you how to do that. Let me check for any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call W4DJW. All right, Larry. Well, I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the rag chew. I appreciate you hanging around for all that. Do we have any other stations that I have... have not checked in, that would like to check in, or that want to rag you, call W4DJW.
Well, see, I think I done asked you this, but as we all know, we talk with so many different people, I can't be sure of this. Did I ask you about the 16-speed records?
I don't remember you asking me about 16-speed records, but what was your question?
Well, see, Larry is already aware of it, but at one time there used to be 16-speed records, and as best as I've been able to figure out, it come in between the spindles and the 78-speed records. One thing I was wondering if I hadn't asked you that before, was you aware of it? And you was talking about the Lafayette store down there up above Bob Jones University. Is that the same Lafayette store that I remembered? It was down there way, way back then.
So, Andy, I do remember spindles. I didn't ever have a machine that would play a circular. It's like a cylinder. It's like a, not a flat record, but a, like shaped like a toilet bowl spool, a spool you roll toilet paper up on, and about that size, maybe a little bit longer. But I never had one of those, no. So I started out when 45s were popular. And then my sister and I both had 45s in our rooms, and then my dad had the big 72s up there in the big console that fit, you know, in the den, the other one. I never had that, those circular ones. And yes, Lafayette was between Bob Jones and Greenville. As you leave Bob Jones and you head toward Greenville, it was on your left. There was a mall over there. That mall is still there. The store, the physical store that he started in, is still there. And he had that one, and he opened another Lafayette in Anderson. And so every now and then my cousins and I would haul stuff between stores for him. If somebody sold something that was in one store and they were in another store, we would haul it over to the other store. But, yeah, that is the same Lafayette, Andy.
Chelsea, I was way, way, way back sometime in the late 70s. I went into that store down there. Just out of curiosity, one time, I was wondering if it was the same one. As we all know now, Lafayette's long gone, but no, I didn't expect you would have one of those 16-speed records, but I got an old record player. I've done discussed it with Larry before about it. That has only, you know, the various options for various speed records. Well, it shows the 16-speed records. And I don't know, whether you've ever been on archive.org or not, you know, and under the various, from cylinders to, let's see, they got 78 speeds, a lot of the ones from way, way back, up until the 45s come out, most of it was 78, but I've traced far as the Carter family goes, from archives, they're on the old stuff from the office, some of those that recorded stuff back then. The 78s started sometime in the late 20s. Now, I don't know this for sure, but somebody I talked on here thought that I was pretty well right, but it was you not, but sometime after the spindles wasn't used anymore, they used those, I believe it was HA4. No, he checked in earlier. Sometimes just Saturday night, man, it must have been him I discussed that with. That the 16-speed records come in between the spindles and the 78-speed records. I know on another website where they had some of the old record players and radios that was combined, that was over on RadioBoulevard.com, they discussed some of that. And that particular setup, when it comes to the records, was notoriously bad about destroying the records. Y'all was talking about the grooves in the records. Those particular records, I see why they didn't last long. That was notoriously bad about destroying them.
Well, while you were talking about them, I was Googling them. I see 33, 45, and 78. 7-inch, 10-inch, and 12-inch vinyl records. And those are the only three that I see. I guess there's more about the other ones that were in between. I guess they were doing a lot of, but I think some of them, kind of like, you know, Blu-ray, I think, is one that was superior to cassette, but cassette won out. It was inferior because it was cheaper and easier to mass produce or something like that. Maybe those were, they started out, but they just didn't hang in there because they were too difficult to produce or they didn't have the quality or for some reason.
Because, yeah, well, this old record player that I've been talking about dates back to probably at the latest, early 80s. And it had the capability of playing 16-speed records. But as you said, I've never seen a 16-speed record. I know all the ones from the 20s, late 20s on till they changed to 45 with 78s. And I'm just deducing, generally, it had to have been him that I discussed that with. Me and Larry and him did, since it wasn't you. But we kind of figured out that it was probably those between the cylinders and the 78s that was the 16-speed records. And with some of that I'd seen on the other side, right there, the old radios and the record players of the time on Radio Boulevard, they talked specifically about how that particular record player, it would destroy those particular records. And you know, I know even what I know is what I've read about it. You know, that's for your time. I don't expect you to have had it, and I don't. Never even seen one. It just happened to be on this record player I got over here. That had to be when it was somewhere in that area, because you don't find them even less now. And if they destroyed records, as it was said they did, you know, they're not going to be around long.
Well, that's probably what happened. And a manufacturer probably decided, didn't know whether that was going to take off or not, so they put that on there just in case it did. Right? I know when I'm working in manufacturing, there's a lot of times you make decisions like that. You're not sure. So either you leave it out or you put it in. If you put it in, nobody ever uses it. And if you leave it out, a competitor puts it in and they steal all your market share. So that's a common problem in manufacturing. Do I add one more capability, or do I leave it out? That's always a dilemma to make those kind of decisions. But that must have been AK4HR Mike, that is another Saturday night net control operator that you were talking with about that. KF4LCI, W4DJW, in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
Didn't take some check-ins. It probably was. I know it was somebody. Like I said, I frequent that archive side a lot for the old time stuff that happened at the opera and they talked about in the show, talked about they have the spindle where they've got some of the old radios and record players combined. I've kind of done a lot of reading up on some of that stuff, and you can kind of trace some of that. Go ahead and get you some more check-ins. KI4LZI.
Okay, Andy. Appreciate the hanging around there for the rag shoe portion. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW.
W. Can everyone on the net please check in N4ZLK, November 4, Zulu, Lima, Kilo. Shane at home in Cleveland tonight. No traffic, no table. Thank you for calling the net.
Okay, Nick, I'd like to recognize N4ZLK. That is Shane, who is back home in Cleveland. Good to have you with us tonight, Shane. Appreciate you taking the time to check in. One last call, all the way through the alphabet, A through Z, Z through A, if you'd like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW. All right, have I missed any check-ins, or have I missed anyone for RagChew, call W4DJW. Okay, be sure and stop back by tomorrow night. We're KO4HKX. Patrick will be calling the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'm sure you'll enjoy it, and I'm sure he will appreciate you being there. Please stand by for my net report. Okay, this is W4DJW now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We'll now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73 and good night.
JBQ, KI4LZI.
CI, KK4JBQ. Andy, did you hear the number of check-ins tonight? I missed it.
I mean to say, I think 54 check-ins.
What can I do for you?
We've discussed before, you know, right about the recording and like what you was discussing. When it comes to the old stuff, you know, I'm big into that myself. You found out before when I've talked to you before about it. Just most of them are all on 78s, but those from that time, like I say, really interest me. You ever delved any more deeper into archive on that?
Andy, I have to admit that as far as time goes, I have been sitting in front of a computer with audio, with analog audio equipment all around me. It seems like for the last solid week, and I've not had a phone near me, I've not had a radio near me. I've been trying to figure out the necessary moves I had to make to connect everything correctly. And then what to do, because I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that as I wanted to. Making up stuff as I went along. I finally was successful. It's clean enough copy that I'm satisfied with it. And I will be able in the future to tweak it a little bit if I want to. But right now, I just want to down and dirty get it copied. Oh, it's fine enough, you know, really. But you can increase the headroom with normalization, stuff like that, you know. Whether I'll be able to appreciate that in the space that I'm listening in, I don't know. And while I've got probably 10 sets of headphones here, I'm having to monitor everything with headphones, and they're very uncomfortable. All 10 of them. So I'm still looking for a set of headphones that are comfortable to wear an extended period of time. But no, I haven't delved into that. But You were calling earlier when you were talking to Dave about the spindles, you know, recording medium. That's actually the original Edison idea. The phonograph was invented by Thomas Alva Edison. Can't give you the date, but it was way back there. And he used wax coated cylinders. And to record, he used a stylus which cut. This was, he was a genius, and I'm not going to be able to explain it. You know what I'm saying? I'm no genius. But to record on the cylinder, it had a set rate of travel along the length of the cylinder. And so he knew that if he cut that cylinder, made a scratch in it, let's just call it that. If he scratched that cylinder at a constant rate, when he went back to use what we would call a needle to pick up the sound that was embedded now in that cylinder, it could hold information like music. Or I think his first recording was Mary Had a Little Lamb. Its fleece was white as snow. You know, that nursery rhyme. That's what he recorded on the first phonograph cylinder. So I don't know who it was that changed the format and when that happened and when 16 speed was ever popular, or it was probably very brief, you know, because they're not, even today, you know, we've been without record players in the home for a number of years now, but they're coming back. And there's lots of people who have kept their old records, and they want to play them again, and they want to experience that again. So they're manufacturing new record players, but they'll never manufacture a 16-speed again. You can probably turn down 33 and a third. I don't know if you can get it that slow, but they're manufactured so you can change the rate of the revolutions. But I think it's only slightly in order to have a constant 33 and a third revolutions per minute. That is adjustable slightly, but I don't think all the way down to 16. How many records like that do you have? KK4JBQ.
Well, see, I don't have any. This record player happens to have that speed on it. And being that I've never seen any like it, you know, really other than, you know, everything I know, learned a lot between RadioBoulevard.com and the archive site there. 78s go all the way back from time that the 45s come into being, all the way back to the late 20s. And I just deduced from all that between the spindle and that was when the 16 speeds was out, because that old record player on the other side of the room I got there had that speed on it for 16s. But as you said, it happened from what I read about it. It had to be very defective, but believe it or not, they put that speed on it. I don't have any records for it, but I'm just curious about it. Like I was me and, you know, the internet control talked about it. I should remember. Right now, his call ain't coming to me. Just curiosity.
And I'll take a stab at it and introduce something that we haven't talked about yet. But do you remember back in the, well, somewhere between the 50s and the 70s, that would be the 60s, of course, but somewhere in that, from 1950 to 1970s, you used to be able to buy a box of cereal for your kid, and that would have a record on the back. Now, my mama never purchased one of those because we didn't have a record player. But that was available. I don't know what they were made of. I don't know what speed it was, what was recorded on it. I know nothing about it. But I can point to that and say that was a novelty. That was in very low production run. But you could get once upon a time, you could get a phonograph record with a box of cereal, for sure. As a matter of fact, what I did enjoy, my mama noticed that when I ate cereal in the morning, I would pour my milk over the cereal, and I would read the ingredients, I would read anything on a cereal box, just to be doing something while I ate my cereal, rather than just look here and there around the room. I wanted to read something. I was a kid, so I'm not going to read the Wall Street Journal. So I took the closest thing, and that was a cereal box. Well, don't you know, I must not have been the only kid that did that, because there was a period of time when I think it was Post cereals. They published like comic books, real books with pages, you know. And when you got it at home, you pulled a strip on one side. They showed you where to do that. Pulled a strip, and that released the comic books, which stayed attached to the box of cereal. Probably none of that survives. But the comic book was there, and you could open it up, and you could turn the pages and read the comic book while you ate your cereal. Do you remember anything like that? KK4JBQ.
Well, see, I've read that about the top record you're talking about. It was on. Seemed like I vaguely remembered that. As you said, I didn't know nothing about it, but I seemed like I do vaguely remember that. But I really think I do. I know the more I've dug into on Radio Boulevard and archive, you know, it goes to making me come up with other things I'm curious about, like it does. If I had been the one who bought that, I didn't, of course, that's long before even probably your time, that had bought that had that record player radio there, big, seems like to be, if I remember, it's a big cabinet type model. Then that took, and I tried to play one of those records on it, and it destroyed the record, and probably messed up the needle too. I think I would have been furiously mad.
Yeah, well, the point I was trying to make was it's very likely that this was a novelty thing, and the very word novelty means it was not very widely accepted. There weren't many like this produced, and so it was a flash in the pan, as they say, a rarity. And like I said, I don't know what the records were made out of. You can look at, you can look at a Victrola, and you know what I'm talking about, that type of record player. It was one of the first, they became popular in the 1920s, all the way through probably the 40s they were being sold. But their needles were actually steel needles, sharpened points on steel. And their tone arms, if you want to call them that, their tone arms, which carried the needle, were very heavy. Now, the material the records were made out of were tougher. It was more brittle, too. You could actually crack those records if you slammed it against, you know, that was done for dramatic effect in some movies, you might remember, that they'd take a record and they'd smash it, you know, a broken record. Well, that's what that's all about. That's what that saying is all about, a broken record. You sound like a broken record. You repeat the same thing over and over again. Not commonly used in the language today, but it was at one time. Those records were brittle, made out of different stuff, not polyvinyl chloride, which is what modern vinyl records are made of chemically. So anyway, they could hold up to the steel needles and the heavy weight of the tone arm, but that it just you know, you play something, you play a record 20 times and it's worn out. You could still hear something, but it was muffled and there weren't any, there wasn't a good sound left. Those needles dug the sound right out of the record, carving it, so to speak. Modern pickups on very lightweight tone arms, usually about 2 grams, which if you're familiar with that measuring system, that's very light pressure on the vinyl. The vinyl itself is more flexible and softer than the old 78s were largely produced to play on Victrola types. But the needle is actually made of a polished diamond or a sapphire or a ruby. And it doesn't wear out, and it doesn't terribly because of the light weight of the tone arm. It doesn't damage the record appreciably. So all things considered, playing vinyl became, you know, a good thing. There are some drawbacks. There are some drawbacks. It's not easy to transport is one of them. And I'm going to have that same issue when I get all of these recordings made. Digital recordings are easy to transport. You can carry them in your pocket, you know. That's what the first iPads. You know, the little music players that you can carry in your shirt pocket. And you could carry hundreds of pieces of music on that. Well, you can't do it with phonographs at all. And you can play a well-recorded digital piece of music. You can play it thousands of times. There's not any change. There's no change at all. It doesn't wear out. But vinyl has its place, and I hope everybody that enjoys it keeps that up and keeps it available to the rest of us when, you know, we have any interest. KK4JBQ.
If there's any other breakers or anybody that want to come on in. I'll stand by, man. I can get to the intents in this. KI4LCI. On these type things, I can get pretty intense about some of this, because when you go to talking about these 78s and all that from archive and that, about those radio phonograph players, I've studied that quite a bit, and I can get intense talking about some of that, but those particular ones, though, I tell you, anybody that bought them, I hope the radio performed better than the record player did by judging from what they said about them.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. This is opening up another can of worms, but once upon a time, I bought a Victrola that wouldn't work. It was a steel. It was a floor model. It was, in a very large cabinet. This thing was awfully, awfully heavy. Had a storage compartment below the turntable. It had a storage compartment of records. And there were a few records in it. And those records, as I said, unlike vinyl, they were also quite heavy. They were bigger around the 78s. And this thing was just stuffed full of those records. And I was intense on getting it to work. I figured out what was the matter with it. It had a broken spring. These things were driven. It was a wind-up. It had a crank on one side. And you would wind it up. It went click, click, click. There was a click called a click spring in there, which kept it from unwinding suddenly on you. So you just wind it, you know, like that. And you get it wound not really tight. That's how the thing broke to start with. You, when it starts getting difficult to turn, you stop. You don't break the spring again. But I replaced that spring. And I enjoyed it for a while. The house was broken into and stolen. Just like that. It was there, and then it was gone, along with all the records. Well, that's spilt milk, I guess you might say. Spilt milk. No reason to recall that, except that I've had hands-on, and I know what makes them run and why this particular one broke. And so I can talk about the tone arm being terribly heavy. Yes, it was terribly heavy. The weight wasn't in grams. It was in ounces. The tone arm was in ounces. And it didn't have any, you didn't plug it in. It wasn't electrical at all. It had a big horn on it. So the sound started off in the tone arm. And that's why the tone arm got that call, got that name. The needle would pick up the vibrations from the record. It would go through a chamber in the tone arm, and then it would go out that big horn. That's the name given to that big thing. And it looked like a flower. Actually, it was painted that way to look like a flower. Wasn't really, really loud, but it was sufficient, I suppose. But I had to change the needle every once in a while I did have it. I had to change the needle, and so I got acquainted with what that needle looked like. It looked like a sharpened end of a pencil, you know, finer than that, of course. Anyway, that kind of stuff is fun, but, you know, if you really want to listen to music, you should probably choose another means to do it. KK4JBQ.
Well, see, over on that RadioBoulevard.com website, all this stuff is restored stuff. And they do the biographies on all that. They do whether it's watching, but it's just the radios, or if it's the radios and the phonographs combined. They do the biographies on there, and all that on there is stuff that's been restored. It's out there at a place out in Nevada. But reading on all that stuff is where I kind of learn about some of this stuff, and boy, as you said, how things have changed. Just like some of those early receivers back in the 20s and the early 30s. As you was talking about the horn that served as the speaker. You go back further than 1920 without the vacuum tube audio amplifier in it. The only way you're going to hear is through the earphones, or if you happen to have some kind of headphones thing.
Yeah, I can remember when I was a child. I don't know where I got the. I didn't think this up. You understand? I got the idea somewhere, and that was to make a crystal radio using an old. Empty. It used to be you could get rolled oats in a box. It was a round box, and you'd cook them. These rolled oats, they were flat like flakes, you know. And Mama would cook them. I was just a kid, you know, so I wasn't allowed around the stove. My mama did not trust me around the stove. Anyway, she cooked those oats, and it was like oatmeal, you know. But, and I ate that frequently when I was a kid. So we had all these oatmeal boxes. They were substantial. The sidewalls were thick enough that, you know, they could stand the shipping and the handling when it got home to be put up in the cupboard, you know, when you weren't using it, you know. It took a lot of handling. Well, now, somebody figured out that if you made a certain amount of turns of wire, really small wire, around on that, on the turns of wire, and used, I guess it was a crystal, a headphone, as I recall. There was no battery necessary. And the tuning of the radio was accomplished with a razor blade. You would use a very fine point of steel, sort of like that phonograph record needle, and you would move it around on a razor blade. And that was how you would tune a radio station. It would only tune to AM, I'm afraid. Well, this was before FM, for crying out loud. And so you move it around on the razor blade, and that would pick up radio stations. And it was free, and there were no batteries to replace. This was improved over time with a small diode. I think it germanium was the material used for that diode. And that would allow you to listen to radio free also. I was a big fan of free radio. No batteries to replace. You ever make people, because of that germanium crystal, they called them crystal radios. Did you ever make one of those?
I did, but mine come from Radio Shack, and where I'm at right here, I'm nowhere near any medium wave radio stations here where I'm at, so I didn't hear a thing.
But that same problem, as I recall, in daytime. But at nighttime, you could get a lot of stations. You get stations from, there was a station, I think it was WSM in Chicago. And I was in Tennessee. So, nighttime's when you want to listen to AM radio with a setup like that. KK4JBQ.
K9OH, WSM is in Nashville. That's right, because on the update radios, I still listen to it some. KI4LCI.
What's thinking of is WLOS. One of the long-time radio stations. And you're absolutely right. I sort of thought, I think that was Billy that came in there, K9OH. Billy, I apologize. I was not sure that I was saying it right when I was saying it, but one of those radios that have been around, radio stations that have been around like for half a century, you know. And when I was a kid, I listened to a lot of radio. It's the reason I kind of had any interest at all when I heard about amateur radio. And here I am talking on a microphone. How about that? KK4JBQ.
Original AM stations had a three-letter call sign. I used to know the one I think you're talking about, but I think the one you might have heard, and I'm thinking it was out of Cincinnati, was WLW. 100 kilohertz.
Andy even knew. Andy knew the frequency. How about that?
Yeah, it
I had to go to Cincinnati not long ago. That's how I kind of happened to remember that. But, yeah, you can scan around out here and find a lot. The one out of Charlotte still has a three-letter call sign, WBT. And then there's the other one in Atlanta. But I cannot remember. It might have been WBS, but I can't remember.
I think it's WSB. It's on 750.
Yep, that's right, WSB. Got my letters backwards.
With your FM?
Well, that's the one I primarily listen to. On Mondays, he does, Jeff Ho does that about, old music mixed in with the current music about the rarities he does. On Tuesday, he does the bluegrass stuff mixed it in. And on Wednesday, he does the week before. Then on Fridays, he does that from the 60s, 40s, 50s, and on back.
Here's a question for you, Andy. What was the name of the show? It was on radio. What was the name of the show that was the precursor to the Grand Ole Opry? It came before the Grand Ole Opry. The Grand Ole Opry was based on that program. Of course, Grand Ole Opry was radio and later television. KK4JBQ.
I don't mean to leave you out, Billy, there, but best I recall, and I read this somewhere, I don't remember now where I read it. I might have read it on WSM's website, but they started calling it the Grand Ole Opry to distinguish it from some other kind of opera or something, because back in those days, and on archive.org, that's where I also found all the stuff from the opera on archive.org. All the old radio broadcasts that dated back to those times prior to radio. Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, no, you good. I just happened to be cruising through for a minute. Somebody has had a locked up transmitter on my repeater repair since Thursday during the net, and the radio hadn't burned up yet. So I've kept the repeater shut down, and so I come in here to just check on things and decided to flip around and heard that and figured I'd say hey to you gentlemen real quick, and I'm going to get ready to call it a night, but y'all didn't leave me out. No, I kind of voted in, so well, good to hear you both. I'm going to go ahead and sign and call it a rest, but good to hear you, Andy, and JBQ there. For some reason, JBQ, I cannot remember your first name. I'm drawing a blank.
I don't know. we've been knowing each other for a while, Billy. This is Larry, KK4JBQ.
I don't know why, I just could not pull that out of my head, Larry. I know you just as well as I'm looking at the computer up here. I just... you can tell I'm getting tired.
All bets are off when exhaustion comes over you. And you work, I know, and I'm not going to repeat how I know, but you work awfully hard to keep one of the best repeaters in the area free and clear for everybody. I, for one, appreciate it greatly. I listen to it a lot. I don't tie it up like I do this one, but especially some of the more public service type things that you feature on your repeater. I think Skywarn. Last time I was listening, Skywarn was on there, and WR8RW was handling the net. Anyway, enjoy it very much, and thank you, sir.
Well, I didn't know that. that was still going on. I'm kind of right here. I done told, I think, Larry about it. Trackway here at Fixed Station operating handicap. This 2400H that I got here has got a dead memory battery in it, so. But the only thing I can really do with it is this one right here, because the thing I put into this thing, next time I turn it back on, it'll be on 140 megahertz. It just won't hold any memory. In my 8900, I goofed it up here over a power supply issue. And it's got a bad diode in it. So when I've been checking in over on 47 lately, it's been exclusively by HT. And I noticed that this past Thursday evening about that carrier coming on, but I didn't know it was still there. I don't know what to tell you, because that's going to cover a lot of fox hunting to find that.
Fire or something. Maybe it's because it's on 5 watts. Who knows, but I feel bad for whose radio it is, nevertheless.
It's almost a perfect double. And no one beats Andy, because he's right underneath the tower. almost a perfect double. KK4JBQ.
Go ahead. I'm sure Larry heard me.
Oh, I was just saying, I enjoy, doing what I do. I've been doing it for almost 25 years. It'll be 24 years this year, and met a lot of great people. Been very blessed to have a lot of good friends in amateur radio, and have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I want people to use it. That's what it's there for. I don't mind people talking on it. That's, burn it in. Somebody's got the radio keyed up, and it's been keyed up since about 7:40 Thursday night. So I've got the repeater completely turned off. I turn it on periodically to see if the radio's still stuck in transmit, and it is. I feel bad for the person, but hopefully they'll go around and check the radios and eventually find it. I just wonder that it hadn't either burned out the files or gotten the heat sink so hot that it set something on fire or something. So I hope whoever it is finds it.
Record, as far as I know, I've never heard of a radio being locked in for that long without melting down. and he probably's never going to let anybody know it was him. Oh, dear.
Oh, KI4LZI. What I was going to tell you when we were doubling was that I'm halfway operating handicapped here on the fixed station. Larry already knows about it, but it's currently I'm using a FT2400 with a dead memory battery in it. It don't remember anything from this time to the next time when I have it on. And being that this one don't have a tone on the input, right now I'm mostly operating here when it comes to using a fixed station. My 8900R's got a dead diode in it because of a power supply issue. So when I've been checking in with you on the Skywarn for the past little bit, it's been bad on the HT. And that when that started happening this past Thursday, I noticed it and tried to come back to tell you that, but you didn't hear me, but I was on the HT. But right now I'm halfway with the fixed station here, halfway operating handicap, until I can get my 8900 back up to speed again.
Understand that. I know that's got to be frustrating. Well, good luck getting that sorted out. That's got to be really, really aggravating. But, yeah, I feel bad for whoever's radio it is, though. I hate that for them. Larry, I've done some testing in years past on some commercial two-way radio gear, and we would use them for, like, linking radios and whatnot. And I would put them on a dummy load on the bench and leave them keyed up for a week at a time, and they would be fine as long as their power was set appropriately. And I'm guessing the reason that this thing hadn't burned up yet is they're probably running at about 5 watts. Most radios can stay keyed up like that for a really long time, but you take, I'm on a TMV71. If I left it keyed up for a week at 50 watts, I would be hard pressed, even though it's got a fan on it. I'd be surprised if it lasted a day.
The TMV71 is what I'm talking on. And I'm running on 20 watts right now. As soon as I key up, the fan comes on. Now, the room is quiet enough that I would notice the hum of that fan. So if it's anything that's running a fan to keep the finals warm, to keep the finals cool, that sound will be noticeable. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The detective work you can do in your mind is almost endless, but it would be, I guess the only way you can know for sure is to do some direction finding. You know, consider it a fox and go hunting the fox. And I wouldn't want to be the one to knock on the guy's door and say, you know, introduce myself and suggest that he has a radio that's been on for a week, on the air for a week, KK4JBQ.
You know, that actually happened here on 6-1 a few years back, and they had to go find the gentleman, and I think they found him, and all it was his, and it was in his mobile, if I recall correctly. The microphone fell between the seat and just happened to land in such a way that it mashed the PTT, and, you know, it can happen to the best of us. I've certainly done it, and I actually got, back when I used to dispatch, you know, we would use touchscreen computer monitors on a console, and I got kind of frustrated one night. Some officers decided to do it, a checkpoint type deal, but didn't bother to give me a heads up that they were going to be doing it, so they swamped me with running tags. And they were giving me tags left and right, and I was sitting there eating a bag of chips, trying to take care of that, and had a little bit, just enough grease on my finger when I touched the screen. Well, the other computer, when I ran the tags, froze up, and I said some expletives that went out over the radio.
It's time. I've got to take it to here at 11, so I'm going to have to bail out, but I'm glad to hear the warning that it's still going on, but when it comes to fox hunting, that's the ultimate. The thing is Billy knows better than even I do, you're going to have a lot of people, beams, and everything to try to trace that down. A lot of people. KI4LZI.
JBQ. Well, I know very little. I have never participated in a fox hunt, or what's more appropriately called today, directional finding, you know, finding a transmitter. But that takes some skill. And I think the Thermal Belt Club is preparing to do such a thing as that, and they're going to build their equipment, the attenuator in particular. They're going to build that. The use of which is strategic, very strategic in finding the fox. But up to a certain point, you can use your own body to attenuate the signal that you're receiving. You just put the radio on the other side of your body, and if the fox is transmitting, and you're close to it, you know. And if the fox is transmitting and you're hearing it slightly,